Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and you're listening to Red River Rock by Johnny and the Hurricanes from Toledo. Whether it's classic pop, rock, or punk, there's a good chance one of your favorite performers or songs in any given genre has roots in Ohio. Ohio's strong music history is one of the reasons it's the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're celebrating the sounds of Ohio this hour. And while there are too many artists and genres to cover, we're going to spotlight some that have gained national attention. Joining me now is Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. Welcome to All Sides, Matthew.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Great to be here. Really appreciate it.
And later in the hour, we're going to open the phone lines in the program to talk about your favorite nationally known music acts from Ohio. So listeners, you can give us a call a little later in the hour, 614-292-8513, or you can send us an email right now at allsides@wosu.org. And Matthew, I want to begin with the early days of rock music and its connection to Ohio. Let's start with Screamin' Jay Hawkins singing "I Put a Spell on You."
Put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Now, Screamin' Jay Hawkins was from Cleveland and has a very distinctive voice. Can you tell me about him and his importance in the city of Cleveland's rock history?
Sure. Well, Screamin' Jay Hawkins really falls into that whole kind of blues and rhythm and blues genre that really Ohio is very well known for. And I think really the thing that is kind of distinct about Screamin' Jay Hawkins is in his live performances, he really brought this sort of theatrical sensibility to these live performances, which was kind of unique in terms of what a lot of blues players were doing. Hawkins was, you know, a vocalist, whereas we, you know, get into a lot of blues performers, you know, with the electric guitar and singing and such. But Hawkins was really just a showman and an amazing showman who brought this sort of theatrical aspects. You know, sometimes bringing a little skull on stage with him when he would perform, or he would have these elaborate outfits. And of course, this whole kind of connection to Alan Freed, and Alan Freed also helping to promote his work, that also helped to break out this kind of early crossover between, say, blues and rhythm and blues.
Was he always known with the word screaming in front of his name, or did that come about later on?
No, that was just sort of his character, you know. That was part of his persona and his because he had this kind of belting sort of scream to his vocal effects.
Yeah, and we opened the show with a segment from Red River Rock by Johnny and the Hurricanes, and they're from Toledo. They had a really unique sound. I mean, that goes beyond just hearing a guitar. What was I hearing in that opening song?
Well, Johnny and the Hurricanes from the Toledo area really were well known for this sort of, you know, it might be, you know, some might term it like, you know, garage rock, but definitely, you know, so well known for this kind of instrumental style. And of course, Red River Rock was really their breakout song. And kind of interesting too that, you know, when the group was playing over in Hamburg, Germany, their opening act was none other than the Beatles.
they were more popular than the Beatles. All right.
Yes. Yeah, they were. And it's kind of fascinating because you find that Johnny Paris, who is kind of the leader of the group, Johnny and the Hurricanes, really also kind of maintain this connection in terms of this kind of garage rock scene and garage rock sound, and also assisting other bands. There was another act out of the Toledo area much later, as we kind of get into the 1980s, called the Exciters. And Johnny Paris was kind of helping to, you know, sort of produce some of their records. So it's kind of neat to see that whole kind of, you know, instrumental style Because that's something in terms of popular music that, in terms of today's popular music, maybe isn't so prominent. Whereas back in, say, the 50s and 60s, having an instrumental tune and having it become a hit was not really uncommon. Of course, it goes back to the great guitarist Link Wray would be example, and his song Rumble. And of course other groups than Dick Dale or The Ventures, but in terms of the Ohio connection to these instrumental rock and roll tunes, Johnny and the Hurricanes is one of those groups from the Toledo area that kind of broke out in that regard.
Yeah, he didn't need any words. He just had the song, right?
Exactly.
So I often wonder about band names, because Toledo's not really known for its hurricanes. Do you know why they called themselves
Oh,
Johnny and the
that one I
Hurricanes?
can't tell you.
You
That
can't.
one I
Okay,
can't. Yeah,
yeah,
that one
that's
I.
okay. That's okay. You can't know them all. We're talking about Ohio's role in rock history with Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. So, Alan Freed, you mentioned him a couple of minutes ago. He was a DJ when radio stations had personalities playing records and basically doing their own programming. Alan Freed, basically, I mean, isn't he the one who created rock and roll? Tell me about Alan Freed and his connection here in Ohio.
Well, Alan Freed used the term rock and roll. Prior to that, a lot of the musical styles was referred to as rhythm and blues. But Alan Freed kind of, sort of changed up the term and used the term rock and roll for music that had already been established within the African American community. So that's important to note. So he sort of you could almost call it almost like a psyop, really, in some kind of way by, sort of changing the term from rhythm and blues to rock and roll. So it was sort of like associated with something new. But also important to note that Alan Freed really was sort of like the Pied Piper of rock and roll. And this is important to note. He not only had his radio show, but he was doing he was help, promoting and producing concerts in the Cleveland area, and then eventually they move him to the big station in New York. But also interestingly that he was also part of the production and kind of behind the scenes work, and also sometimes featured in a lot of rock and roll films that were coming out during that period of time of the rise of rock and roll. And these films would feature a lot of the sort of major rock and roll artists of the day, people like Chuck Berry or Ritchie Valens or Little Richard. And so it was a way to bring rock and roll beyond just the radio. And of course, the youth were totally into the radio during that period of time, the transistor radio. And then they're driving around in their cars, and we get AM radio kind of going on. But really, it can't be expressed enough that, Alan Freed really was the Pied Piper for rock and roll and popular music. He was about breaking down barriers. And during that period of time of the 1950s, of course, we think about a lot of the, social, sort of conflicts going on. But he, amongst others, sort of viewed music as a way to bring people together, and in this case, rock and roll music, and even more so directed towards the youth. Because what you found is that black youth and white youth basically were turning on to the same music. And so sometimes at, some of these performances, there would be actually a rope down the middle of a venue, and the black youth were on one side and the white youth were on one side. But thankfully, as time went on, the ropes came down and the youth were able to join together through music. And that's why it kind of goes along with this whole notion that music is the universal language, and that's something to never forget.
Yeah, and I mean, back in this day that we're talking about, the Alan Freed time, how much of a band's success was due to DJs basically liking their music and being willing to play their songs?
Well, that was really absolutely key, because through that particular era, and really beyond, you know, to some degree, you know, the DJs were just as popular in some cases as the musicians for whom the records that they were playing. So Alan Freed himself was a huge star, just like some of the artists that he was featuring on his radio show. And so the DJs played such a huge role in terms of helping to popularize an artist. And of course, you know, getting a record played was so crucial and vital in terms of getting your work out there. Of course, you know, you have to understand, you know, it's, you know, we're talking, you know, pre-internet. There was some rock and roll music that was being featured on these television variety shows that also helped to break out a lot of the music. But again, these little films that Freed did were usually influential. So the DJs played a huge and important role in terms of the development of this rock and roll and popular music during that period of time in the 1950s.
Yeah, and when we were talking about the idea of this show and just talking about like the sounds of Ohio and how Ohio's connection to music history and rock music, you know, you just come up with the question of like, why is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland? Of all the cities in the country, why Cleveland? And I really, when you Google that and you look it up, it's Alan Freed.
Well, it really is. I mean, because again, it, you know, it can't be underestimated the influence that Alan Freed had. You know, he was the Pied Piper for rock and roll music during that period of time. He saw it as a way to break down social barriers. He saw it as a way to bring the youth together and bring musicians together. So that's also interesting too, because in a lot of these, you know, films that he would later on produce, it featured, you know, white acts and black acts and kind of showed, you know, sort of the unity that can come through music, you know. And, of course, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame being in Cleveland and then Alan Freed's connection to Cleveland, that also plays such an important role. And also, importantly, you know, to get the whole thing off the ground was Ahmet Erdogan, founder of Atlantic Records, which was originally really heavily based in this whole kind of rhythm and blues era, but of course later on became such a huge label with, you know, acts like Led Zeppelin on their label and others. But yes, it is interesting that we have this whole kind of rock and roll connection in Cleveland. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a wonderful destination that people from all over the world now go to learn about rock and roll and popular music. And of course, you know, people all from around Ohio and around the country come. But what's also fascinating about that is that it's a great example of something moving almost from, say, lowbrow culture to high culture. Because of course, originally during this, you know, 1950s, rhythm and blues and rock and roll music was considered in some circles as the devil's music. It was considered something that will send the youth down to, you know, the road of juvenile delinquency. And we find that a number of sort of consistent players in popular music, the media, politicians, threatened entertainers, social figures were very critical of rock and roll music when it was kind of exploding during that period of the 1950s. And so it's fascinating because it went from this kind of considered to be lowbrow culture, low culture, and now it's sort of high culture, right? Because there's a whole museum associated with rock and roll music. And so it's fascinating because we see those same figures play a role in different genres of popular music in terms of this sort of, you know, backlash towards musical styles. So we find that in, you know, the same figures are, you know, in terms of the backlash for heavy metal music, for instance, or punk rock music or rap / hip hop music. But it's fascinating too, because a lot of those genres now are, you know, go from, say, low culture. I don't necessarily consider it to be that. I consider it to be popular culture, but you could affiliate it with low culture, and then now it's high culture. So there's, you know, museums for rap music and so on. So the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is just one great example of that. But what's great about that institution is that it's sort of the umbrella for a variety of different musical styles.
That's what I was going to say. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame may have that name, but it has multiple music styles represented. It's not just rock and roll.
Exactly. And that's important. And of course, you know, they've got a number of special exhibits that come through that either focusing in on a particular artist or a particular genre. So they do play an important role, not only for Ohio, but also the country and the world, in terms of helping to document and sort of preserve the history associated with a number of artists in different genre, many different genres of popular music. So again, I like your line, you know, yes, it's called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but there's so many other genres associated. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't just be considered to be just, you know, narrow into one thing.
Right. Well, our celebration of Ohio music continues after the break. We're going to take a look at the Lemon Pipers, Ohio Express, and more. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And that music you're listening to is Red River Rock by Johnny and the Hurricanes from Toledo. The Pretenders, Ohio Players, Black Keys, Nine Inch Nails, and 21 Pilots are just some of the nationally known musicians with roots in Ohio. We're talking about some of them and music genres that they represent this hour. And it's no accident that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in Cleveland, but it's not just Cleveland that rocks. All of Ohio rocks, too. Still with us is Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. Thanks again for being with us, Matthew.
Thank you for having me. It's really wonderful to be able to highlight Ohio's music and recognize the importance of it.
Listeners, I want you to tell us your favorite nationally known music artist that happens to have Ohio roots. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. So I mentioned the Pretenders, Nine Inch Nails. There's lots more. In your opinion, why do you think that so many nationally known rock acts have roots here in Ohio? What does Ohio have?
Well, you know, I mean, Ohio, I think to me really is sort of, you know.
I feel compelled to say it's the heart of it all, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that. Definitely you can say that. But also it's sort of this genuine aspect to it. I mean, that's sort of how I describe it. When I go all around, you know, the country and the world doing, you know, lectures and presentations on different topics, people say, well, you know, what is it about Ohio and and its people? I would just have to say genuine. And I think that there's that aspect in terms of many of the artists coming out of the state and just the way in which, you know, some of these artists have made an impact in popular music. Now, some artists and some groups, you know, they have their origins in Ohio and they go on to other parts of the country or other parts of the world. But, you know, it's kind of neat to see this sort of creativity coming from Ohio and Ohio's contribution in terms of popular music.
Let's look at a band from the 60s, Oxford's own Lemon Pipers. They had a hit with the song Green Tambourine. Let's listen. Now, was Green Tambourine their only hit?
Well, it really was. I mean, you know, I mean, and that's not only indicative of necessarily this group, it's just sort of indicative of popular music, right? So, you know, a lot of times you get into this whole idea of the one hit wonder kind of thing. And the Lemon Pipers sort of, you know, fell upon that particular era of this whole kind of psychedelic rock era of the late 1960s. And it really fits really well. That song is really kind of so indicative and so characteristic of those sounds. And that sort of, you know, jingly jangly guitars and sort of this psychedelic 60s sound.
Now, they were from Oxford. Do you know if they, went on tour with this one song and gave it a go, or did they, was it,
They
because.
had it. Oh yes, they had a number of releases and toured. But in terms of sort of like the longevity of in numerous songs, you know, definitely Green Tambourine is certainly a standout.
All right. And another pop band was Ohio Express. They were from Mansfield, and their hits include Chewy Chewy and Yummy Yummy Yummy.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just what I'm gonna do.
Now, I have to be honest, you know, I know that song, Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. That is the song that I know. I had no idea the band's name was Ohio Express. It's one of those things, right? So this band leaned into Ohio with even with their name. Can you tell me more about them?
Well, they, you know, they came again, kind of similar to the Lemon Pipers. They really come out of that whole kind of psychedelic 60s era. And what's fascinating is that really one of their early breakout tunes was a tune called Beg, Borrow, and Steal, which sort of was very much, you know, how to say it nicely. Somewhat of a ripoff of the tune Louie Louie by the Kingsmen. And what's fascinating too, in terms of the Columbus connection, that it was basically Columbus radio airplay that brought that song to the forefront, and that helped to bring the group to the forefront was the tune Beg, Borrow, and Steal. And of course, then they would go on to have a number of other hits, and of course, Yummy Yummy is probably the one that folks recognize the most.
The 60s and 70s were the decades of, you could call it like bubblegum pop music releases, groups like Ohio Express and the Archies. So, when you think back to that era, is it still rock and roll, or when does it change from being rock and roll to being just to being a different genre? We're calling it pop,
Well, that's a good question because I sort of feel like there's only two styles of music, the kind you like and the kind you don't, really, to be honest with you. So I sort of see it all under the umbrella of rock and roll music or all under the umbrella of popular music. I know that sort of may not necessarily answer your question entirely, but we get into this whole kind of idea. You know, once you start to break things down into categories, it kind of sort of gets really tough. But I sort of feel, I hope that folks can take away a little bit of this whole notion that there's only two kinds of music, the kind you like and the kind you don't.
I can get behind that. So when we were talking about Alan Freed in the first segment, being a DJ who was really responsible for making a lot of acts popular, DJs had a lot of power back then because they could pick the songs that they played. There's also the example of payola, the act of a record company or an artist paying a radio station to play their music without telling the public about that payment. It's essentially a form of bribery, a secret payment for airplay. Can you tell us more about that and its effect on the music business?
Well, you know, again, it really goes back to the whole notion of this sort of backlash against the rise of this rock and roll music during that period of the 1950s. But what you had in some cases, although Freed denied ever being involved in payola, but what you had in some cases is that record labels would pay DJs to play their song. And of course, you know, because radio was so important during that period of time, having your song played on the radio by DJs was hugely influential and important in terms of getting your music out to the listeners. So this whole idea of payola kind of, you know, but then there was this backlash against rock and roll music. And so then again, often what happens, you know, like in this particular case, if we're citing popular music as the example, is you'll have entities that will go after, say, the figurehead. And in terms of the figurehead for rock and roll music, and kind of bringing people together through rock and roll music, bringing youth together through rock and music, bringing black youth and white youth together through rock and roll music. It was Alan Freed. And so Alan Freed was then targeted for this whole kind of payola, this pay to play notion of record labels paying DJs to play their songs.
So they're saying that they couldn't get popular on their own. It had to have been, is that?
Well, I mean, certainly radio plays such a huge role during that period of time of helping to popularize artists, you know. But you know, that you could almost make a funny little quip in that, you know, it's just like lobbyists going to politicians in Washington, D.C. Because lobbyists are basically going to politicians and trying to get policy passed. In this case, it was record labels trying to get their artists played. And you know, it was brought to attention really through this explosion and really this backlash against rock and roll music during that period of time in the 1950s. Again, Freed basically, you know, claimed that he was never involved in this whole pay to play. But it's fascinating because, look, you know, you have lobbyists still today, you know, speaking to politicians about policy. So it's just ironic that it's in a different field, but yet in that period of time, it was rock and roll music that got the focus and got the attention.
Well, and in addition to DJs, there were other factors in a musical act getting national attention. I mean, there still were record stores. There were appearances at clubs and, you know, just doing concerts. And then there was also, you know, I mean, this is before the internet, but if you made it on TV, that helped too.
Big time. I mean, really, it was really also during that era of the, you know, if we're dealing with really heavily on the 1950s and you know, going into the 1960s as well. And again, you great comment, you know, you have to think it was pre-internet. So the television variety show was absolutely huge in terms of breaking artists out into the area of popular music. It was basically sort of bringing these artists into people's living rooms. And where, you know, prior to television, people would sit around and, you know, look and listen to the radio as a family. And then television comes onto the scene and people are sitting around and looking and watching, you know, television and sort of waiting to sort of see, you know, what's going to happen on the Milton Berle show. Is he going to bring out Elvis Presley this week? Or, you know, you could even go into the 1960s with, you know, the Ed Sullivan show. Are the Beatles going to play? When are the Beatles going to be on? So these television variety shows were hugely influential. And of course, you know, as we kind of get into, say, like the 1970s, you know, you also have print publications like Rolling Stone magazine that also played an important role in terms of sort of, you know, distributing information about rock and roll popular music, but definitely those television variety shows were hugely crucial. And also films also playing such a big role, particularly as we get into like the late 1960s, where you start to see a lot of these sort of festivals, important, you know, rock festivals like the Monterey Pop Festival or Woodstock or the Isle of Wight Festival. These festivals were captured not only for sound recordings, which were later released by some artists or at the festival as a whole, but also if you couldn't go to the festival, you could go to your movie theater and watch the film Woodstock, and see, you know, be a part of it you know, maybe not physically, of course, at the event, but watching the film, kind of having a connection to that whole scene and culture through that area of popular culture.
We're talking about Ohio's role in music history with Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. Earlier, we played Ohio Express with Yummy Yummy, and now we're going to go to the Ohio Players and one of their most famous songs, Fire. So the Ohio Players were from Dayton, and there's a number of funk music acts from Dayton. Is there a reason Dayton is the city of funk?
Well, certainly, again, you know, you have this particular genre is so heavily identified with Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so many great groups came out of Dayton, Ohio, or musician and musical figures in that particular area. And it's fascinating because we get funk music sort of as an amalgamation of sort of, you know, blues, rhythm and blues, soul, gospel. And of course, by the 70s, you know, it would also in some ways incorporated rock music. And you have so many legendary funk groups coming out of Dayton, the Ohio Players, Lakeside, Slave, Fazo, Roger and Zap, Roger Troutman, you know, Roger and Zap. Also, you have Skip Little Axe McDonald from a native of Dayton, Ohio, who later would go on and be so influential in terms of serving as a session player for Sugar Hill Records, the infamous rap label, and of course, Adrian Sherwood's On You Sound Records, and as a solo artist. But it is something unique. You know, sometimes our region of the country is referred to as the Midwest Funk Zone.
Yeah. Why Dayton? Is it just if one or two people make it big from the same city, it just becomes a part of that city?
Sometimes it's a bit of that. But I just think that, you know, you have all these kind of creative people all kind of, you know, emanating, you know, kind of germinating from that particular scene at that particular time. But certainly you do have a lot of that in terms of popular music where you have one artist break out. Then record labels descend on that particular city and sign a bunch of acts who are very similar. You know, you could use grunge music as sort of a contemporary example where, you know, Nirvana hits it big and then all of a sudden there's all these acts being signed in Seattle, you know, helping to kind of bring grunge music to the forefront. But for that period of the 1970s, it cannot be underestimated, this whole idea of, you know, sort of this I-75 machine, funk machine, or funk express, you could almost say it, because you have, you know, George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic out of Detroit, and then you've got Bootsy Collins out of Cincinnati, and then all the amazing funk groups coming out of Dayton, or, you know, like Ohio Players, Lakeside, Fazo, Heatwave, Roger and Zap, or individual players like, you know, Skip Little Axe McDonald. All of that kind of is fascinating because, you know, we see funk music really putting its imprint in this area known as the Midwest Funk Zone.
We could rename the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame into the Funk Hall of Fame then. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it definitely needs to be recognized. I would say, you know, more and more recognition for Dayton's contribution in terms of funk music. And of course, a lot of those artists not only, you know, gained popularity during that period of time, but then as we kind of move forward into sort of the rap and hip hop era, where a lot of those artists ended up having their music sampled by a lot of rap and hip hop artists. So, for instance, you know, Roger Troutman, Roger and Zap, wrote a great tune called California Love. Well, people don't, you know, often don't associate the original with Roger and Zap or Roger Troutman. They associate it with Tupac Shakur and Dr. Dre doing the sort of remake of the tune California Love. So it's fascinating that we find that a lot of those Dayton funk artists, and of course you have to include, you know, Parliament Funkadelic coming out of Detroit, you know, they found a new lease on life through the whole rap and hip hop explosion, in which sampling was being so heavily used to create the music that was being made during that period of time. So that's important to note. So it gave a lot of those artists sort of a new lease on life, if you will, and also helped to kind of extend and has extended the history and cultural influence of funk music.
And coming up, we're going to talk more Ohio sounds, including alt rock. We'll get into some punk and some more modern music. But we're going to go to the break here with Roger and Zap, which Matthew has mentioned a couple of times. This is 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. From rock to pop to punk, we're talking about some of the nationally known acts in these music genres that came from Ohio. Still with us is Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. Thanks again for being here, Matthew.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to highlight Ohio's creativity.
And listeners, you can tell us your favorite nationally known music artist from Ohio, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One of the most famous bands to come out of Ohio, the Pretenders, was led by Akron's own Christy Hind. Let's hear their song, My City Was Gone.
I went back to Ohio. My city was gone. There was no train station. There was no downtown.
South Town would have disappeared. Yeah, and that song seems very personal, to Ohio, train stations being gone and such. Can you tell me how you would place the Pretenders into the music genre scene for Ohio?
Well, the Pretenders it's the driving force behind the group, you know, to me really is Chrissy Hind. And she has such a influence, you know. It's sort of this period where sort of punk music in the case of Pretenders sort of crossed over into this sort of pop punk style to me. And of course, Hind was so unique in terms of her ability to sort of express these issues, like in that particular song, the deindustrialization of Ohio, in sort of a poetic kind of in a poetic way. I think really the Pretenders really are representative to me of this crossover into like sort of pop punk. You know, Chrissy Hind eventually makes her way over to England, and I mean she's playing with you know, like The Damned, for instance, and joining up with members of The Clash for jam sessions and so on. So again, it's just sort of another example of an artist, you know, from Ohio, genuine, you know, going out into the world and sort of, in this case, for this particular song, going out in the world, but then coming back to Ohio and seeing, wow, you know, things have changed so much. And of course, you know, a lot of that deindustrialization, sadly, is part of Ohio's history. I think it's great because that tune particularly, it's like so many people know that song. Mm-hmm. And so many people, you know, definitely from Ohio can identify with that deindustrialization aspect. But it's fascinating, too, because it really gives a glimpse of that for other people all around the country and all around the world.
And we're going to take a call from Jeff in Columbus because he wants to talk a little bit more about this genre as we head from pop to punk. Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just am really struck with the punk tradition, I guess, in Ohio, Columbus too, but just in Ohio, I'm thinking of Devo, Dead Boys, Pure Ubu, Firehose, The Breeders, you know, it just goes on. And it's the Cramps as well. So I just like the fact that Ohio has that punk rock roots. And just quickly, one time I was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and I was looking at the Ohio exhibit of Ohio bands, and I ran into Cheetah Chrome, who was the guitar player for the Dead Boys, showing his son his old guitar when he was in the Dead Boys in the 70s, which I thought was super cool.
That's a really cool story, Jeff. Yeah, I'm glad you got to watch that happen. Thank you for your call, Jeff. We appreciate it. So Jeff brought up the new wave and punk music coming to the scene. One of the most famous was Devo, and Jeff brought that up. So here's their song, Whip It. Yeah, and Matthew, I'm sure that you agree with some of the Jeff listed a lot of bands there, but Ohio has a real niche here in punk as well.
Well, that's what I love. I mean, for me, you know, I'm a longtime musician, native and creative from Ohio. For me, that's where I got my start in terms of playing music and recording music, was in the punk scene in Northwest Ohio in the early 1980s. And Jeff is absolutely right. There is such an amazing connection between punk music and the state of Ohio. All the groups that Jeff listed are just absolutely incredible and have made such a huge contribution to punk music. A lot of folks associate punk music with the whole kind of New York scene of the 1970s. You know, groups like the New York Dolls and the whole CBGB scene and the Ramones and so on. And of course, a lot of folks associate, you know, the punk scene over in England, but Ohio really, as Jeff mentioned, has made such a huge contribution in terms of this whole kind of punk music, but also during that period of time where sort of, you know, punk was often labeled as alternative music. So again, it kind of goes back to what we mentioned earlier in terms of maybe the label of the genre being, you know, sort of changed, you could almost say psych-opt, where, you know, alternative music comes onto the scene. You know, I reflect on a lot of the groups in Ohio during that period of time where, say, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were coming to the forefront in terms of this whole kind of punk, funk, heavy metal, rock, rap crossover style. But Ohio also had groups like the Great Barbecue Gods, Big Hunk of Cheese, the Love Cowboys, as the answer to what the Red Hot Chili Peppers are doing. But also in terms of, you know, sort of this American hardcore punk rock from Northwest Ohio, you also have a group called the Necros, and they had a record label called Touch and Go Records, which is a hugely influential record label in terms of punk music and, you know, later, of course, being labeled alternative music in some cases of some of the artists that they were releasing. But that particular record label was basically coming out of the bass player's basement. Corey Russ, the bass player from the Necros, started his own little record label as a way to release sound recordings by the Necros. And then, of course, then the group, you know, gained attention and connection with a lot of the groups coming out of the Detroit scene originally early on. And so you have that whole kind of connection between sort of Toledo and Detroit. And that's been something that's that goes back to even like the blues era, where Fortune Records, a record label out of Detroit, also had a number of sort of Ohio acts, particularly in Northwest Ohio, that were signed to that label. So in terms of punk music, that tradition kind of continues. And Jeff's comment is absolutely right on. I love all the bands that Jeff listed because he is 110% spot on. And it should not go unrecognized, Ohio's contributions to, say, punk music. And I think it really speaks to what I mentioned earlier in terms of this whole kind of genuine nature of Ohio and sort of Ohio creativity, you know, just sort of the, you could say working class, but just sort of like more like the genuine nature of some of the creative folks coming out of Ohio. And certainly that definitely applies to that whole punk scene. That was the era that I grew up in. That was the era that I was playing bands in. You know, being 13 years old and being in, you know, my little punk rock band called the Guitar Heroes, we're jokingly, because we couldn't actually play our instruments. And trust me, that was well before the video game Guitar Hero. I should have trademarked it. I you know, you may not necessarily be talking to me now had I trademarked
Marked,
that
yeah,
particular
you
phrase.
invented Guitar Hero, yeah.
But we were opening up for, you know, it was amazing because at that time, particularly kind of going back to Jeff's statement, like if you were in a punk band, you know, you were sort of given an opportunity to play live in front of people and do something that was different in your community. And a lot of those bands that Jeff listed were doing something different in their communities and breaking down these kind of
All
barriers.
right, before we run out of time, let's hear from two more bands. First, another band from Cleveland. Let's hear Nine Inch Nails and their song Down In It. And then we have another song. This is Hard Row by the Black Keys, and the Black Keys are from Akron.
If you wanna go and leave your man,
All right, and we are running out of time, Matthew, but I wanted to talk about these two bands. Can you tell us where Nine Inch Nails and also the Black Keys fit into Ohio and their place in rock music?
Absolutely. Well, real quick here, Nine Inch Nails, of course, led by Cleveland's Trent Reznor, play such an important role in kind of this sort of alternative music kind of rise. What's fascinating about that particular tune is it was also kind of co-written and co-produced by the late great Keith LeBlanc, and also Adrian Sherwood from England. So Keith LeBlanc was the house player for Sugar Hill Records. He went on to become kind of a very important producer after his song No Sellout came out. And then he worked with Adrian Sherwood. And both those guys, as well as Reznor, kind of were putting together little kind of samples. So it was sort of this early era in which sampling and kind of industrial music was kind of coming out and forming together. In terms of the Black Keys, it's just another great example of this kind of garage rock, garage blues rock, if you will, that Ohio is known for. There's another great group called Five Horse Johnson from the Northwest Ohio area who also fit into that mold. And again, kind of going back into this notion of all these different groups kind of falling under the banner of popular music, rock and roll music, and making their contributions. And of course, you know, with Nine Inch Nails and Black Keys, I mean, they're known, of course, not only in the state of Ohio, but nationally and internationally.
Well, and we have time for one more because we've traveled the state, but there's one band from Columbus that's got a lot of attention much more recently, 21 Pilots. Here's their song Ride. I mean, for the sake of being from Columbus, Ohio, the 21 Pilots is really having a moment right now, wouldn't you say?
Oh, they really are. And again, what's great about that group is that they're blending together and melding together so many different styles. And I think that that's really indicative of a lot of the music of, say, the 21st century and so on. You know, in the 1970s, we found a lot of musical styles blending together. It was sort of like rock plus. So it was like rock plus jazz, that equals fusion. Rock plus classical, that equals progressive rock. But this particular era of the 21st century popular musical styles, you get so many different genres blending together. And that tune by 21 Pilots is such a great example because you even hear a little bit of reggae going on in there. And like, what a great way to help kind of bring reggae music into the ears of the listener. You know, by doing this kind of blending together of all these different musical
Well, I want to say thank you to Matthew Donahue, teaching professor for the Department of Popular Culture and Critical Studies at Bowling Green State University. Thank you for joining us today on All Sides.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I want all the listeners out there in Radio Land to never forget, there's only two kinds of music, the kind you like and the kind you don't.
Yes. And thank you for joining us to tell us why not just Cleveland rocks, but Ohio rocks as well. And so we're going to close the show today with a band that's not from Ohio, but love the state enough to write a song for us. The Presidents of the United States of America and their song Cleveland Rocks. You've been listening to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.